We are gathered today in the most auspicious occasion of the disappearance anniversary of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master.
Just like India.
As Srila Prabhupada has told us, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born in Jagannath Puri as the son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur was magistrate and superintendent of the Jagannath Temple in Puri. And at the time, to be magistrate was a very important position and rare for an Indian to hold during the British rule. During the Rath procession, the chariot stopped in front of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house. And his mother took the baby up onto the chariot, and when garland fell from Lord Jagannath onto the baby, blessings. He's even said that when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born, his umbilical cord was wrapped around his body like a Brahmin's sacred thread. And Srila Prabhupada has also told us that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was a ray of Vishnu, or in other words, a liberated soul who has been sent by Krishna to give birth in the material world for a specific purpose. And the specific purpose was to assist Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur in his work and to carry on his mission. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was a great innovator. And if we see the way he conducted his missionary activities, we'll see the line in which Srila Prabhupada is coming, how Srila Prabhupada is really continuing in the same spirit as his Guru Maharaj. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur taught that one must engage in Bhagavat Marg and Panchatriki Vidhi at the same time. Bhagavat Marg means hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam, pastimes of the Lord and the devotee. And Panchatrika Marg means deity worship. So in the emblem of the Gaudiya Math, it's a circle, and there's a little picture of Radha and Krishna, and there are these lines that cross. And one side is Bhagavat Marg, the other side is Panchatattva Marg. And there's also the Mridanga, the Brihad Mridanga, which is the printing press. And, you know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta really gave a lot of emphasis to producing and distributing books. And on one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day celebrations, Srila Prabhupada wrote a poem and delivered a talk on the occasion of the Podium Month in Bombay. And in the poem, Srila Prabhupada composed a couplet. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proof. Impersonal calamity, thou hast moved. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was very pleased with that couplet. He showed it to various, and showed it various confidential devotees, and somehow Srila Prabhupada was able to understand Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's mission and mood. And thereafter, Srila Prabhupada got the nickname Kavi, or poet. Of course, in time, Srila Prabhupada did translate so many books. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also built a big temple in Bhaktisar in Calcutta. But of course, he later lamented that his disciples they didn't really use the project for the purpose for which it was meant. They became attached to the opulence and fighting over who would have which offering. So he wanted to use big temples to preach, but there's also a risk, and that is that the devotees will become attached to the opulence and the prestige that comes from having a big temple, and use the temple for their own personal benefit. Power, prestige, money, and so on. So that is a risk. Of course, we are building a big temple here. So we should pray to the proper instruments of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, so that we can use it for the purpose for which it's meant to not be distracting. Of course, Srila Prabhupada did take up the idea of building big temples in select places, specifically Bombay, Vrindavan, and Mayapur. And they've proven very successful in terms of attracting people. But what happens to the people once they're attracted? That's also a challenge for us to really give them the message of Krishna consciousness, the message of pure devotion, so that they'll actually surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness and engage in unmotivated devotional service. Otherwise, people can come. I mean, there's different types of people. Some people will come and, you know, they'll be happy to offer obeisances to the deities and pray, put some money in the box, and feel good. But a lot of that type of service or ritual is materially motivated. They give money, but they hope they'll get some return on it. Of course, the famous example in India is the Tirupati temple. You know, Balaji has a reputation that if you give him so much, you get so much in return. Or the other way, that if you, you know, people go and they sort of make a deal with the deity that if we get such and such result, we'll give you such and such donation. In fact, there's even a joke in India. I don't know if you should tell jokes on such an auspicious occasion. But one man was going to play the races. So he went to the deity. And he said, "Lord, if I win 1 lakh of rupees, 1 lakh of rupees is 100,000. If I win 1 lakh of rupees, I will give you 50,000. So he went to the races, bet on his horse, and he won 50,000. So he went back to the deity. He said, "Lord, you didn't trust me. You took your half first." They come to make business with the deity. Sometimes they even try to cheat. So we have to elevate the people. You know, we have to. It's gradual. We know that. It's gradual. But somehow we have to give them the message without compromise. Once I was in Madras, and it was really the first time I was on my own in India. And I was meeting people and preaching just the way I had heard Srila Prabhupada preach. But gradually I heard from some of our friends that there was an undercurrent of protest against the way I was preaching. And, you know, I heard it, I was surprised, but I didn't really make any change. I just heard it. And then one of our best friends, I actually stayed in his house. I was there for about 2 months, so I stayed in different places. Somebody. And he said the same thing. You know, he said, "You shouldn't criticize others. You know, just just say what you want to say about Krishna consciousness, don't criticize others. And then he actually gave the example of the Gaudiya Mutt. He said, you know, they have Janmashtami, and they have thousands of people coming, but they don't criticize like you do, they just do what they do. So I thought about it, and I thought, you know, does Srila Prabhupada really want us to be like the Gaudiya Mutt? I didn't think so. Anyway, I kept going. Then another friend, his brother was actually going to sponsor Srila Prabhupada's program in Madras. He also said the same thing. That, okay, you worship Krishna, okay, you can worship Krishna, but you don't have to say that Krishna is better than Shiva or Ganesh.
Oh, good.
Or, you know, you do bhakti, that's okay, but you don't have to say that bhakti is better than karma yoga, jnana yoga. So I kept getting it. Wherever I went, I was getting it. So I thought maybe Krishna is trying to tell me something. I said, well, maybe I should, you know, try to hear what they're telling me. So, okay, I made a resolution. I'm not going to offend people anymore. So, I had an appointment with quite a, you know, big industrialist. And, you know, I showed him the pictures of our activities, showed him the books, took out the life membership form, explained the benefits, asked him to sign, and he said, what about Shankaracharya? He's one of the great acharyas of India. You haven't said anything about him. So I said, yes, he's one of the great acharyas of India, yes. But you haven't said anything about him. You know, what about him? What about his teachings? So I tried to avoid getting into an argument. I said, well, something very general. But he kept pushing, you know, he kept probing. So finally it all came out. That actually he's an incarnation of Shiva. We give him all respect, but he came with a special purpose, which is to bewilder people and to preach a veiled form of Buddhism, which is basically atheistic. And, you know, I even took out the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. We didn't have Chaitanya Charitamrita then. We read the verses about Lord Shiva being Shankaracharya, but actually preaching atheism. But the purpose was to bring the Buddhists who were atheists to accept the authority of the Vedas. It was a strategy. And then, of course, Chaitanya came and taught the proper understanding of the Vedas. So, things became tense. He put forward a lot of arguments. And I thought, well, you know, I really didn't want to, but somehow I did it anyway. So that was the end of the discussion. Put away all the pictures, put away the books, put away the membership form, closed my briefcase, and I was ready to go. So as I was just about to leave, and his particular, he had quite a big compound, and he had his factory and his office and his residence all in the same compound. So as I was about to leave, he said, "Before you leave, I would like you to see my temple room." I thought, oh no. There's going to be a Shiva Linga. He's going to want to bow down.
Okay.
And if I don't bow down, he's going to be more offended.
Okay.
But I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I could see he wasn't going to take no for an answer. I said, all right. So he escorted me to his temple room. It was quite a big room. You know, it's temple rooms go in houses, probably about as big as these two glass windows, square. That would be, yeah, and then there was another area like from here to there where the altar was. So I walked in, it's a marble temple room, all white marble, with an elevated platform. On top of the platform were big marble deities of Radha and Krishna. And I was really happy to see Radha and Krishna. I hadn't seen them for a long time. Because even the Vaishnava temples in Madras, they're almost all Vishnu. And there's one famous temple of Parthasarathi, which is just Krishna alone. So I was delighted. I offered my obeisances. And then I looked at our friend. And, you know, with my expression, I said, "What's happening?" And he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, "That I'm a devotee of Krishna, and my whole family are devotees of Krishna, and we've been devotees of Krishna for many generations." Then he said, "Actually, I was just testing you, and you did not compromise. I'm very pleased. And I will be happy to become your life member." So we went back to his office. He took out his checkbook, paid the whole amount in one installment, and became a life member. So then I was really confused. Then I started thinking, well, maybe I haven't been doing the wrong thing. But I wasn't quite sure. So I got back. At that time, I was staying in a hotel room as a guest of the Dasa Prakash people, who are very staunch Madhva devotees. And it's a vegetarian hotel, and they gave me it was almost like a small apartment at the back. So I went back, and there was a letter from Srila Prabhupada, and any letter from Srila Prabhupada was a great occasion. So I opened the letter, and, you know, the words just jumped out of the page. And he said, "The fact is that I'm the only one in India who is openly criticizing not only impersonalism and demigod worship, but anything that falls short of complete surrender to Krishna." And then he said, "My Guru Maharaj never compromised. And similarly, I will never compromise. And similarly, none of my disciples should ever compromise. We must declare it boldly that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all others are his servants. And unless people understand this fact, they cannot dream of peace or prosperity. So, I got my answer. So that was Srila Prabhupada's mood. His Guru Maharaj's mood and his mood, and that was what he wanted our mood to be. When we opened the temple in Juhu, One Life member, he was a very intelligent person and a very good friend of Srila Prabhupada's, Richard Tanmota. He said to Srila Prabhupada that if you want to get a lot of money in the box, you have to start spreading rumors that people who give money to these deities, you know, get a lot of results from it. You know, they get a lot of benefit from it. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, we don't make business with our God. So, that was... Now, I would say overall, although it's hard to imagine because we know who we are and what we are, but I think overall, Srila Prabhupada and his Guru Maharaj are at peace with our efforts. Because once we celebrated Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's, I think it was his appearance day. And I'll start with the disappearance day. That was in Surat. And Srila Prabhupada began his talk by saying that both the rising of the sun, both the sunrise and the sunset are beautiful. So similarly, the appearance of a Vaishnava and the disappearance of a Vaishnava are beautiful. So there's no cause of lamentation. That was in Surat, and then 2 months later, we were in Indore, and Srila Prabhupada really wanted to have a big celebration. So he had the devotees, you know, break the fast at noon, but he wanted to have a big feast and invite all the people from the Gita Press to come to the feast in the evening. So we invited them, and it was a nice program in the evening. And then after the program, we all went downstairs to have the feast, which fortunately or unfortunately in those days meant a lot of oil, because you couldn't get cow's ghee very much. And then one of the alternatives was buffalo ghee, but even the buffalo ghee wasn't the best. It was sort of expensive. Anyway, whatever it was, every feast was a mixed occasion of joy and anxiety that we were going to get upset stomach. But anyway, when we were almost finished with the feast, Nanda Kumar Prabhu, who was Srila Prabhupada's servant, came down. And when he would take the plate of Srila Prabhupada's remnants, he'd go into a room, no matter what was on the plate. And when he came out of the room, the plate had 3 slices of ginger, a little pile of salt, and some wine. And he would say, does any of my wine any of my
Well, anyway, he came down. There wasn't much more than that. But he did deliver two messages. You know,
he told us that Srila Prabhupada had said two things. One was that the feast was so good that he couldn't control his senses. And the second message was that my Guru Maharaj is very pleased with those. So I think that's true, even now. And I think the last point about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's mission that has been taken up by Srila Prabhupada and in turn has come to us is the Mayapur project. Of course, the previous acharyas did want like a Krishna conscious city there and a wonderful temple. And there was some beginning after Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya and built a temple there. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta instructed some of his disciples to build houses. And there are a few houses that his Grihastha disciples built there. But the dream of the spiritual city, you know, hasn't been fully realized. Now, and then there's also the idea of building the big temple. Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted to build a big temple there. So, again, this is maybe just my own impression or realization, but once on Navadvipa Parikrama, we went to Godrumdweep, which is across the river from Mayapur, to the house of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is also residence for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. They each have rooms in the house. And you can see, you know, the bed and the table and chair and paraphernalia of both. No, actually I went once on my own, just with one of my godbrothers. But anyway, I went on the balcony and I was looking across to Mayapur, and it said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur looked across the river to Mayapur and had a vision of this wonderful temple in this Vedic city. And there, from the balcony, I saw Srila Prabhupada Samadhi, the Dome of Srila Prabhupada Samadhi. And the architecture of the Pushpa Samadhi in Mayapur is not exactly Bengali. And I even heard some very senior devotees say that, you know, we should have done it just in the, you know, in the same style, Bengali style. But somehow the impression I got at the time, the intuition was that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually pleased because he wanted devotees from all over the world to come to Mayapur, chant and dance together, Hare Krishna's Hare Bol. And that architecture, which combined elements of other styles, sort of
was the visible manifestation of the fulfillment of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision and desire that devotees from all over the world should come together. Now, of course, the situation in Mayapur with the government there is problematic. Anyway, maybe we won't digress too much. But I should tell this story. That once Srila Prabhupada came to Calcutta from London. He had stopped over in London, and in London he had sort of personally designed the first building for Mayapur. And he was like so enthusiastic. He was just beaming. He had the blueprints with him, and he showed us the blueprints, and he was just so excited and enthusiastic. And, you know, he had the devotees in his room, a few of us who were there. And he was talking about the Mayapur project. And then he raised the question of the flooding. He said, you know, what if we build this temple and there's flooding? It could be ruined. Well, then what? And then he started suggesting maybe we should build it somewhere else, not in Mayapur. And he even suggested, at the time, he suggested Birnagar would be the first place of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, So he was, you know, he was practical. You know, he's also practicing. So that really had our minds spinning, because all along, up until then, we always identified the big temple with Mayapur. So the way he dealt with us reminded me of Lord Chaitanya with his devotees. Lord Chaitanya would take one position and he'd convince all the devotees of that position. Then he'd take the opposite position and then convince all the devotees of that position. So sort of like that with Srila Prabhupada. Somehow he convinced us that we shouldn't build it in Mayapur. And then he sort of turned it around and convinced us we shouldn't build it in Mayapur. But I think the real lesson was, and it was a lesson that he repeatedly taught us, was that we shouldn't take anything for granted. When we're dealing with the material world, we shouldn't take anything for granted. And he often defined intelligence as the ability to see the same thing from different angles of vision. So he wanted us to consider things with our intelligence and be open to conclusions that we might not have begun with. But whatever it is, wherever it ends up being, he said very emphatically to us, that if you build this temple, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will personally come and take you all back to Godhead. So it was definitely an encouragement. So it's we can't really separate. You know, there's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then Srila Prabhupada. That's our line. These are our immediate predecessor acharyas. And it's our line. Srila Prabhupada is carrying forward the line.
Oh, yeah.
One other.
You know, on the subject of not taking anything for granted, I don't really know what to make of this myself, but Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very innovative. You know, he had the idea there should be a boat, and devotees should travel from port to port on the boat and spread Krishna consciousness. He had the idea of the theistic exhibition with doll exhibits, which had, you know, in those days was probably comparable to IMAX or animatronics, or, you know, something very avant-garde. Sometimes he wore like this, you know, he was dealing with Britishers, and there are pictures of him, you could see him wearing this very long coat and a turban. It's like he looked like a very distinguished Britisher, but with, you know, touches of goatee and so on. He would ride in a limousine. Now, when I first went to India in 1970, only the richest people had cars. Only the richest people had any sort of cars, and basically those were Fiats and Ambassadors. And a few very wealthy people had, you know, imported. So that was in 1970. Now, what would be the condition in 1930? Hardly anyone had any car at all. Even the rich people didn't have cars. And he had a limousine. You can see pictures of him. A limousine. You know, very nicely dressed. And he would entertain, you know, very big government people and scholars. And there's a picture of him and his disciples receiving some British dignitaries in Mayapur, and the disciples were wearing like these, they almost looked like Christian, you know, they had like the collar. It was sort of like a Nehru jacket, sort of like what a Christian father would wear. I mean, very innovative, you know, very innovative. So, somehow or other, like Rupa Goswami says, somehow or other, somehow or other, want people to fix their minds on Krishna. Somehow or other. A big temple, IMAX movies, or, of course, the basics of will always be there, Kirtan, the philosophy and prasad. So that's the mood of mercy, the mood of mercy of our acharyas, not to be complacent, you know, not to sit in the temple and eat rice and dal and think about, go out, think of ways somehow or other engage people in Krishna consciousness. So we have a big, we have a great lineage, and we have a big challenge. But I think we have a lot of good material too. I think we can do it. And Srila Prabhupada said, I mean, you, all by the mercy of his Guru Maharaj, but he said, I do it 100 times more than my Guru Maharaj, and I want you all to do 100 times more than me. We pray for the mercy of our predecessor acharyas that can be empowered by their mercy to carry on their mission and really help people, help ourselves and help others. Hare Krishna. So, any questions or comments?
Can I ask you a question about some devotees they differ on this. You know the covers of our books today, and the covers that we had 20 years ago, and some covers have been changed. I always maintain that we should actually change our covers. The genre of the 70s and the 60s and 80s is totally different to what we're experiencing now. So how do you feel about this? That we should...
Not take Krishna away from the covers. Srila Prabhupada said about his presentation of Krishna consciousness that it was old wine in a new bottle. So to do what you said, I mean, I'm not commenting specifically on book covers, but to follow in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, or to follow in the footsteps of our previous acharyas, means to keep the essence the same, but to change the packaging, if necessary, so that people will take it. And that's what every acharya has done. Now, of course, the great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they can make more drastic changes because they're empowered to do that. We're not. But in terms of the presentation, you know, I'll give an example. There was a book distributor, very successful book distributor, and when he would give people the book, he would say that this book teaches you how to live in harmony with nature so that you feel peaceful and satisfied in life. So some other devotees thought he's compromising. He's not really presenting the message like Srila Prabhupada did. So he went to Srila Prabhupada and sort of complained or questioned what the other devotee was doing. And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Well, that's what I say. Except he said it's sweeter, like a sukha." So, we shouldn't be fanatical. We shouldn't, you know, Niyamagraha, we shouldn't act whimsically, you know, independently and whimsically, but we shouldn't act fanatically either. Yes.
There seemed to be some hesitation to bow down to Lord Shiva in case there was Shiva and deities in that temple, you know, mentioning the story. When I go to another Hindu temple, sometimes I just straight go to the deities of Lord Krishna and bow down there, thinking that all the other deities are covered by my worship of
Lord. That's true. That's true.
But, what should be our position of, you know, Shiva being from this, I mean, Vaishnava, some books? Should we try to bow down in case this the deities of Shiva there in the temple, or some Indian temples in India, like Lingaraj?
We have taken him off of visiting, staying at some Shiva temples.
Yeah, it's a tricky point. I mean, the Vaishnava Namyata Shambhu, where she was the greatest among Vaishnavas, we all take her respect as a Vaishnava. But the thing is that people respect ISKCON as authorities. And we might bow down to Shiva thinking of him as a Vaishnava, but other people might see us bow down and think, oh, we bow down to Shiva, we bow down to Krishna, we probably bow down to
Sai Baba.
So they're all one. So that's why it's difficult. Yes, internally we do offer him respect as a Vaishnava. But they don't know he's a Vaishnava. Many Hindus think he's an equal god.
like Krishna, and some even think he's superior to Krishna. So that's the difference. When Srila Prabhupada came to Madras eventually, we were invited to a house program of, it was more than a house program, he was quite a wealthy person also, and he was inaugurating a temple in his house. And the main deity in his temple room was Shiva Linga. So many dignitaries were there, including Srila Prabhupada, and he passed out flower petals to all the guests, and you know, at the appropriate time they all showered the flower petals on the Shiva Linga. And we were outside the deity room. They couldn't accommodate all the devotees. But when everyone else was throwing their flowers on the Shiva Linga, Srila Prabhupada threw his flowers in the corner. So when everyone came out, we went in and looked in the corner, and there was the deity of Krishna in the corner. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, so we have to be conscious that we're like the acharyas, you know, and we can't just act on our own internal mood without being conscious of the effect it might have on others. And that's why I think we have to be very careful. We know Shiva's a Vaishnava, and we can offer respect as a Vaishnava, but people may misunderstand. So I think it's good if externally there's a clear differentiation between the way we honor Krishna and the way we honor Shiva in a public situation.
Can you elaborate further on how Shiva is a Vaishnava?
Yes. You mean, how do we know he's a Vaishnava?
How do you convey that to people that are exposed to Indian religion, that come out of the woodwork and they are veering toward Mayavadi and Shaivic philosophy? How do you, what passages, what, how do you win over a Shaivite, so to speak, by explaining to them our philosophy?
That's a good question. Well, the first, it's a matter of authority. You know, when we're talking about Shiva, you know, you don't know Shiva and I don't know Shiva. You know, you don't know Krishna and I don't know Krishna. We're only speaking from what we've heard. We might have some little realization, but basically, we're speaking from what we've heard, from what we've read. So it's a question of whose authority we accept. Now, there are many Vedic literatures, we don't have the time to read them. Nobody does. In fact, very few people have the knowledge of Sanskrit to be able to read them, to speak of the time or information. So, every acharya has accepted the Bhagavad Gita as authority. The Bhagavad Gita is considered the essence of Vedic knowledge. If you read just the Bhagavad Gita, you get the essence of all the Vedic knowledge. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, aham sarvasya prabhavogmata sarvam pravartate. I am the origin of everything, from me everything emanates. Aham adihi devanam. I am the origin of the devas. And commenting on that verse, Srila Prabhupada commented that the three basic devas in India are Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. Krishna is even the origin of Vishnu, when you speak of Brahma and Shiva. Then, if you go further, I mean, there are many verses in the Bhagavad Gita, but if you go further, you come to Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Srila Jiva Goswami, who Srila Prabhupada said is the greatest philosopher of all time, Srila Jiva Goswami and his Sandarbhas has established, with reference to the scriptures, that Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme authority in Vedic knowledge. And in the Bhagavatam, there are descriptions of Lord Shiva and his relationship with Vishnu, with Krishna. He's a devotee, there's just no doubt about it. He's a devotee. And there are even other sort of, you could say, circumstantial types of evidence. Srila Prabhupada is very fond of telling the story of a foreigner who came to India looking for God. This is in the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he was going all over India visiting all sorts of temples. And finally he came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's temple. And he saw Radha and Krishna. And he bowed down and he said, "Now I have found God." So the devotees asked, how did you conclude that this is God? And he said, because in every other temple, the deity is doing some sort of work or some sort of practice. Like Shiva is sitting in meditation or he's chanting a mala. In every picture of Shiva, basically, you see either he's sitting in meditation or he's chanting. But in our temples, you know, the god is just dancing, laying on his food and dancing with Radharani. So he must be God because he has nothing to do except enjoy. So that's the truth. And there are verses attributed to Lord Shiva in Puranas that he always chants the name of Ram. So if you go deep enough in the Vedic scriptures, you find evidence.
What is that scene in the Mahabharata where Ram is worshipping Govinda? Can you explain that? That's been told to me. Is that a valid passage in the Mahabharata?
Yeah. It may not be in the Mahabharata, but...
The Ramayana.
Yeah. But the idea is that Krishna likes to serve his devotees. Krishna likes to worship his devotees. Just like on the cover of practically every Bhagavad Gita, there's a picture of Krishna driving the chariot of Arjuna. So it doesn't mean that Arjuna is supreme or Arjuna is greater than Krishna, but the Lord takes pleasure in serving his devotees and worshiping his devotees. When Sudama Brahman came to visit Krishna in Dwarka. You know the story? Yeah. Krishna received him and placed him on his own bedstead and washed his feet. Krishna washed his feet. But not because, you know, Sudama Vipra is greater than Krishna, or Sudama Vipra is supreme, but because the supreme likes to serve his devotees. Nanda Maharaj will order Krishna, you know, bring my shoes. Krishna will bring his shoes. But that's out of love.